Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
I'm going to open it up to the floor for any questions or comments now. Just raise your hand if you would like to make a question, ask a question or make a comment to any of the speakers. There's a woman over here. If you can just say who you are.
I'm a police officer from Essex Police. I have a question for Ian. When you said you went to Humberside Police, did you find that you were well supported when you first reported the incident to the police, or did it take some time before you could actually get your message across that you needed their help?
Well, actually, in my case, I didn't present to the police. It was as a result of an anonymous call from a neighbour that resulted in the police arriving. But the officer was very skilled. The officer investigating the case was very diligent, and he actually received a commendation, and his whole team received a commendation. That 2 minutes in the back of the van that got me to open up and say, yes, the cause of my injuries is in that property, changed my life, and to that officer I'll be forever grateful.
Well, that's fantastic news.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm struck by you said in your presentation, Mark, that you didn't believe that domestic violence is a gendered form of violence, and which is quite contrary to what I said this morning when I opened the conference. As you said, more and more women's aid services are opening the doors to men, and I truly believe that any victim that presents to any service should receive an appropriate response. But you know, the evidence is that it is a women's issue and it largely happens to women. That is not for a second to ignore the experiences of men, but and the UN recognises it as such. Do you think there's a danger in terms of preventative work, in terms of working with children and young people? And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this, Marie. You know, is there a danger that if we don't recognise the root causes of these types of violence as being about young people's, you know, ever worsening, it seems, attitudes around gender and stereotypes of men and women and the roles they play and all of those kind of things, that we, you know, ultimately we're not going to really get anywhere?
I think our charity is quite clear. I mean, we don't feel that ideology has a place in domestic abuse. I mean, our view is a victim is a victim is a victim. And that's where you start. In terms of the solutions, again, there can be different solutions for men and women, for people from a different ethnic background, and obviously in different in terms of sexuality as well. But we felt that by having a gender, it's actually acted as a barrier because you're putting people in silos and you're moving away from the people aspect. The second point is, you know, we do have concerns about the violence against women and girls strategy. Not the strategy itself, but if you're a man, where do you fit in? Whether you're in a same-sex relationship or in a heterosexual relationship. And I know domestic abuse policy all fits under that, but for us it gives the wrong message because, just on the surface, violence against women and girls, where do male victims fit in under that? So that's why we have a concern about it. We feel that it's a barrier to ensuring that there's equality for all victims.
It's an important debate to have. And I know Joe Todd, who was also advocating for the needs of male victims earlier, was very clear that male victims, it's not about having a mirrored response female victims, because actually, you know, that it's about different experiences. And women's experiences of abuse often is entrenched in, you know, their position in society, their unequal position, and that impacts on their experience and or causes their experience. But actually, for male victims, it's about understanding their particular needs and therefore the particular responses that they require. And I, you know, acknowledge that I think there's still a lot of work to do in relation to that. Marie, did you have any comment to make?
For TENSA, when we are working with young men, and specifically just groups of young men, it's so important to challenge that the majority of their behaviour is entrenched and is acceptable to be abusive to young women. So we do take a gendered approach, and though we will never name it as that to young men, we do look at the fact that they need to start taking responsibility for not just themselves, but for their friends as well, which takes time. It's not something we go in, blurt out, and then leave. It takes a long time. But actually, when you start to unpack that and that it is about power and control, they do start to take responsibility, and there is the intelligence there amongst many, many, many young men who then take that responsibility, turn around, and then start using that to speak to other young men, which is so empowering and so important, I think. And I also think for young women who do take a lot of blame on themselves, it is important to have these conversations. But I do recognise that it isn't always a male perpetrator. We recently did a number of scenes, as I mentioned, and we did look at the man being controlled using a mobile phone by a girl. But looking at that, and actually when we've workshopped that and tried that, that's not been accepted by young people, which I think is really interesting. So we have to challenge those as well, and what that means to be a man. What does that mean? You know, what does that mean? And to start to have those conversations. So it's a tough one, either way you go, but to start and have those conversations with young men and young women separately and then bring them together, I think is so, so powerful, really, really important. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Frank.
Thank you. Frank Mullane, AFTA. I'd just like to acknowledge the bravery of any victim that comes forward, first of all, regardless of gender or sexual orientation or whatever. But can we not coexist with the complexity of this debate? Of course, we must recognise every victim, but can we not coexist with the certain obvious gendered natures of this problem? I'll just give you an example of the homicide statistics, which are skewed about 4-1. If we don't recognise the complexity of this, we have a simplistic response and we will miss important needs. So by having a complex response, I think we're more likely to meet the correct needs, men and women.
Thank you. Would you like to respond?
Can I just answer something briefly?
Of course.
I mean, thankfully, I didn't get to put my mindset of suicide to fruition. But I can't help wondering that, had I been successful, would there have been the well-rehearsed media conference that says, our hearts go out to the families of Ian, we must ensure this never happens again. If awareness is gender neutral, catch everybody, all victims, of course there are different needs between men and women. But if the bait is gender specific, why be so surprised if men don't swim into the net? That's my view.
The
I work as an IPA in Knowsley, and we work with male and female victims, and obviously we have a lot less male victims come forward, and over the years that I've worked, of the ones that have, a number of them have actually turned out to be the perpetrator rather than the victim, and we know this is an issue, and Joe mentioned it earlier on. So the question is just, as an organisation, how do mankind address that issue? Because I would imagine that perpetrators coming forward as a victim is harming your cause more than a gender issue than anything else. So I just wondered how you would approach the victims who come forward to you who are in fact perpetrators.
Well, I mean, I think on that issue, and I think there's a number of points. I mean, first of all, there's never been any proper academic research. We know it happens, but, you know, let's be clear. You know, let's have the facts and figures and let's have a proper debate around that. And also around the debate about the very small minority of women who will be in the same situation. The problem is there's lots of figures that are grasped out the air, but let's have them on the table, properly peer-reviewed. The whole industry and sector can look at these and look at them in the whole, because that's a problem. Obviously, we recognise that some men will be, if you like, victims in disguise. And as a signposting organisation, we won't screen them. If we refer them on to other agencies, they will do the screening, and we're very much clear about that. And the thing is, for us, though, if you're running a helpline or a service, and in the back of your mind, every man that actually comes to your service could be or may be a perpetrator, a victim in disguise, then you're almost casting that person as actually guilty, and they have to prove their innocence. And we have a real problem with some of the organisations in the sector who take that view, because we don't feel that that is right and proper. If you run a service, you should, on face value, accept what people say to you, and then you tease out any information if you have suspicions. So we want to see the research. Everybody does. It's hearsay.
Very briefly.
Yes, briefly.
For me, what I hear is that some men present as victims and are perpetrators. So what we're saying is somebody commits a crime and actually says it wasn't them or it was somebody else. Why is that such a shock? For me, the place to deal with that retribution is that whether a man puts a female victim through the trauma of giving evidence, when they have the option to say, I did it, I was guilty, or reverse the roles, the retribution should be in the courts, in the sentencing process, not as a barrier to awareness to say, I'm not going to encourage you to come forward in case you might be a perpetrator. That's just wrong.
I think what we're talking about is when you mentioned the screening process, the dedicated service that Respect run, and that's identified that 15% of callers are suspected to be perpetrators. And I, you know, to be fair to them, I think their approach is very much about supporting the men. They exist to support the men. But it's really important that those are acknowledged and recognised, I think.
But the thing for me is that I'm not disputing those figures per se, but, you know, where is it published? Let's have the actual information published and checked and verified, because if organisations are running helplines, it's hard to look people in the eye. And we worked with a Info Down in Cornwall who helped male victims, and he acknowledged that there were victims in disguise, but it wasn't at that scale. And what I'm saying is, let's have it out on the table with the facts properly verified. And secondly, let's look at it in the balance. I come back to what I've said. You know, there will be, unfortunately, some females who will be victims in disguise. So if we're going to do all this research and get to the heart of these people who pretend to be victims, let's look at it in the round, not just pick on men. Let's look at it in the round. And that's really part of what Ian and I were talking about. Let's look at it holistically. Well, I would say, with our charity, in 10 years' time, as trustees and chairman of trustees, I'd really hope that our charity wouldn't exist, because it would mean that all organisations in the domestic abuse sector help both female victims and male victims, and there isn't a gender divide. And as trustees, we hope in 10 years' time that is the case.
I would say I don't agree with some of what you're saying, but one thing I certainly agree on is that we certainly need to do some more research about the needs of men, and but also about the root causes of domestic violence as a gendered issue as well. So I will end on that note, and have my chair's prerogative to have the last word. Okay, so we're gonna have a break now, another coffee break. Again, the coffee will be served in the same place it was last time, and I'd ask you to be back in here for 15:40. But before you leave, can we have a show our appreciation for today's speaker?
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.